The famous Walter Reed Army Medical Center closes later this summer after more than a century. A ceremony was held there earlier today. Patients included President Dwight David Eisenhower, Generals John Pershing and Douglas MacArthur, and hundreds of thousands of wounded Americans since its doors opened in 1909. If you worked there, got treatment, or visited there, we want to hear your Walter Reed story. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Jessica Adler wrote a paper called A Very Necessary Institution, the founding of Walter Reed Army General Hospital. She's a doctoral candidate at Columbia University and joins us from her home in California. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for having me.
And 1909, well after the Spanish-American War, 8 years before the U.S. entry into World War I, why establish an Army hospital in peacetime?
Yeah, that's really the question that drew me to this hospital in the first place in terms of historical research, because it is interesting. I mean, 1909, what's going on? Not only is it long after the Spanish-American War, it's also well before World War I. And also, if you look at the Army records, you see that the number of soldiers actually being admitted to military hospitals is steadily declining in the first decade of the 20th century. So why and how was this hospital seen as necessary and justified at the moment that it was? So in order to answer that question, I think you have to look at some larger context. So in other words, what else was going on in American society that might help explain how the hospital came to be? So I think the first thing to really consider is this idea of American internationalism. So during, as you mentioned, the Spanish-American War, there's this moment when the U.S. is really, for the first time, beginning to proclaim its power as an international force. And during that very short conflict, what you have is deaths due to disease far outnumbering deaths due to battle. So in the aftermath of the war, you have Congress asking, how could this happen? How could we have lost more than 2,000 troops due to things like malaria, typhoid, dysentery, yellow fever, as opposed to what were seen as more worthy injuries and fatalities due to things like gunshots. Only about 360 troops died in battle during the Spanish-American War. So what these congressional committees conclude is that an army has to prepare for the medical consequences of war even during times of peace. So American troops at this point continue to occupy so-called tropical areas in the Philippines and in Cuba, and preventive medicine, the study of what causes diseases, how to formulate vaccines to prevent them, becomes seen as a very worthy area of study.
And that takes us back to the namesake of the hospital. Of course, there were American troops in the Canal Zone in Panama, and that's where Walter Reed did his work.
Right, that's true. And actually, the primary advocate for the hospital, who was a fellow named William Borden, was a very good friend of Walter Reed's. Walter Reed, of course, did his major scientific research in 1901 and 1902 when he discovered that the mosquito was the vector for transmitting yellow fever. This is what he's widely celebrated for now. William Borden was the unfortunate doctor to have operated on Walter Reed in 1902 for what was thought to be a sort of routine appendicitis surgery. But very soon after the surgery, Walter Reed died. And people who recount the founding of Walter Reed often say that perhaps Borden was very remorseful about the fact that Reed had died almost at his hands and was very eager to make sure that there was an adequate tribute to this man.
We've asked our listeners for their Walter Reed stories. This one we have is from Frank Cronin, and he wrote, "I must admit, this will be one of the saddest days of my life, seeing this military institution close. I was a soldier stationed at this great facility from May 1970 through April 1972. I have many great memories, one of which was an Ed Sullivan show taped there in early 1971. Truly a sad day. The ceremony was held there today. The hospital itself does not actually close down until the end of August, but this was the day that as part of the ceremony there at Walter Reed today, officials marked the moment with what's known as a casing ceremony, a formal event in this case on the parade field in front of the main hospital that symbolizes the end of the unit. The colors or the unit's flag were taken down, put in a protective covering or cased. The commanding general overseeing Walter Reed, Major General Carla Hawley Boland, hosted today's casing ceremony, presided over the uncasing of the new Army colors for what will be the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, Bethesda in Maryland, and Fort Belvoir Community Hospital in Virginia. Those facilities should be up and running by mid-September when the State Department and the District of Columbia take over the current grounds of what now houses Walter Reed, and of course, Bethesda, also the site of the National Navy Medical Center. In the meantime, we'd like to hear your thoughts. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Let's begin with David. David with us from New Hampshire.
Yes.
And what's your Walter Reed story?
Well, I was an intern at Walter Reed in 1961, 1962. And I found that hospital to be one of the greatest teaching hospitals in the world simply because we had cases flown in from all around the world. And I also had a chance to meet President Eisenhower, who we had to admit because of a potential heart attack. And I actually started an intravenous on him and found him to be a wonderfully sweet man.
You actually put a tube in the president's arm?
Yes.
That must have been, I hope I get this right, moment.
Yeah, well, yeah, you got that right. It was a little tremulous, but it went in very smoothly, and he smiled, and he said, "That was really a good shot." But Walter Reed, I was just so sad. I was in Canada, and I was so sad when I heard it was closing down.
Well, thanks very much for the call, David.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
This email from David in Northfield, Minnesota. In 1982, I was stationed in the D.C. area. Our 15-year-old month-old son required cardiothoracic surgery, and I was fortunate to have doctors Head and Fall of Regan's cardiothoracic team perform a newer surgery that resulted in less scarring, allowing him to be a cross-country running and ski athlete during his high school years. We received world-class care at Walter Reed, and our son's life was directly and positively affected. We thank you, Walter Reed. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Bob. Bob with us from Northeast Georgia.
Well, good afternoon. I'm a retired physician, and I was drafted during the Vietnam War. And through a combination of good luck, I happened to be stationed at Walter Reed for my entire two-year tour. I had spent my whole life in university hospitals, and I was very pleased to find that Walter Reed was the equal of any of them. I think my favorite Walter Reed story came from the time that I went outside of my radiology department, and I saw on the bench, waiting to get x-rayed, among the GIs, a major general, a two-star general. And he said, Major, they call you Major when they're mad at you. They call you Doctor when they're not. But he said, Major, don't you know how to treat a VIP? And I took a deep breath. I thought, how am I going to get over this? And I said, Sir, you got to have 3 stars to be a VIP at Walter Reed. And he said, Thank you, Doctor. Sat back down.
And back down. That's nice. That's nice.
But it's a wonderful place, and I will believe to my dying day that the decision to close Reed was based on the fact that Maryland has 2 senators and the district has none.
Ah, interesting. All right. Well, a political solution, perhaps. Thanks very much for the call.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And it's interesting, Jessica Adler, he was talking about the quality of the various kinds of hospitals. 102 years ago when Walter Reed opened, hospitals did not enjoy a great reputation in this country.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the turn of the century is really the moment when the modern hospital is sort of born. People much more widely accepted the idea of accessing treatment in hospitals because of major changes that had occurred. So by the end of the 19th century, people begin to really widely accept that the germs cause disease as opposed to things like social deviance or dirty clothing or
miasma.
Right, exactly. You know about miasma.
Yeah.
And so you have this increasing acceptance of going to these institutions for care. There's also the invention of machines like the X-ray. So people really start to see, wait, instead of staying at home to get care where I can get the rest of my family sick with germs and where I can't have access to machines like the X-ray, I might as well go to a hospital. There's also a mass movement of people from rural areas to cities, and it's much more practical in cities to access care in central locations as opposed to having doctors come to small apartments and treat people among their family. So, but you're right to suggest that, I mean, Walter Reed was a major turn away from army hospitals of the day, which were still post hospitals in the late 19th century, were very rudimentary, very, you know, dirt floors, tent walls and ceilings, no running water. And for Borden and his allies, this state-of-the-art medical institution in the nation's capital really, as your caller just suggested, could help to put a military hospital on par with civilian hospitals that were increasingly at this time becoming affiliated with universities, medical education programs. The new Army Medical School, which was founded in 1893, was to be affiliated with what would become Walter Reed. And so it was very much imagined as what your callers are saying it represents to them, this idea of a state-of-the-art military medical institution.
We're talking with Jessica Adler, who's a doctoral candidate at Columbia University, who's done a lot of research into the foundation of Walter Reed Hospital. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Anne. Anne's on the line from St. Paul.
Hello, good afternoon. I arrived at Walter Reed in June of 1967 as a student nurse as part of the Walter Reed Army Institute of Nursing, which had been started during the Vietnam War as a scholarship and as a way to recruit nurses who, of course, were needed in large numbers during that war. I arrived right after the end of the Tet Offensive and saw young men all over the grounds, amputees in wheelchairs, my age, had all of my nursing training at Walter Reed. I was there for 2 years, lived in a building called Delano Hall, which had been a nursing residence in the 30s and was reopened for this program, the acronym of which was RAIN, Walter Reed Army Institute of Nursing. And then I was stationed there for a year on the cardiothoracic surgery unit after I graduated from college in 1969. It was an enormously tumultuous time, as you know, to be in a place like Walter Reed. I had the best clinical nursing education anyone could have from some wonderfully intelligent and brilliant Army nurses, and it was just a phenomenal experience. Met my husband there as well.
That's interesting. We just got this email from Gabriel in Oakland. My parents met at Walter Reed in the 1950s. My mother was visiting a friend from nursing school who worked at Walter Reed and was dating one of my father's army buddies. The two groups of friends got together, and it was the beginning of a romance that had my urbane French-Canadian father making his trek out to my mother's family farm in Pennsylvania. Hard to imagine how they would otherwise have gotten together. Does that sound like your story, too?
Well, not even so much that, but the experience, the clinical experience, the nursing education, the medical care that I saw there was just incredible. And to this day, as a practicing nurse, I am grateful for the incredible education that I got there. It was just second to none. And, you know, we all looked at Walter Reed as a mecca of medical care at that time, and when I said I was going to get my training at Walter Reed, people were just astounded. It was an incredible experience.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go next to, this is Joshua. Joshua with us from Vacaville in California.
I was stationed up at, I was treated at Walter Reed after I was stationed up at Fort Myer, Virginia, being the ceremonial unit of the Army. And actually saw, I was at the, I did the retirement ceremony for the Secretary of the Army after the Walter Reed scandal.
This is when there was mold found in a bunch of the buildings and conditions were deplorable.
Yeah. Well, I started having my breakdown with a PTSD and actually admitted myself to my chain of command, and they sent me up to Walter Reed. And while I was there, they said that I had a, you know, anxiety disorder, not otherwise specified. They said I had a sleeping disorder and that I had a I had major depressive disorder. And they weren't, no matter what, they weren't going to admit that I had PTSD, which I didn't think I had until I went to the VA, and they're like, well, you have PTSD.
Yeah. And what year was this?
2007.
So not that long ago.
No, they basically, the only people that they were admitting had PTSD were is if you came right back from the war. Like if you were shipped from the war to Walter Reed, they would admit that you had PTSD. But I was having major issues getting out, going outside, sleeping. You know, depression to the point where I didn't feel safe with a firearm anymore. You know, I was thinking of suicide all the time, and what they thought was it was all prior service for me.
Joshua, we're glad you made it and glad somebody figured it out.
Yeah, same here.
All right, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate
it. Just to build on what Joshua just talked about, I mean, speaking a little bit about the history of the institution, I mean, we talked earlier about people's very proud memories of what Walter Reed is to them, but you know, this idea that Joshua had trouble getting a diagnosis that he thought was warranted, I mean, the actual political justifications for the founding of this hospital were somewhat, you know, sort of, I guess it had to do with this modernization, this idea of internationalism, but in the congressional committees where Borden was trying to justify the founding of this hospital, he used the reasoning of saving money for the government. And so, you know, this idea of keeping soldiers off the pension list by examining them very thoroughly in a hospital where doctors would be well trained and they could therefore make proper diagnoses.
Jessica Adler, thanks very much for your time today. Good luck with your dissertation.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow, in criminal cases, whether it's vandalism or murder, victims rarely get answers they want. That's changing. A new program brings offenders and victims face-to-face before the trial. Laura Sullivan will be in this chair tomorrow to talk about finding justice outside the courtroom. Join her for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cohn in Washington.